speaker for tonight, Jim.
I got the white cap. Yeah. Hi, I'm Jim Barracks. I am indeed an alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
And for you, those of you who are new, I also used to smoke too many cigarettes, took too many drugs, ate too much food, spent too much money, got married too damn much. I'm the most obsessive, compulsive person that I know, other than the rest of you in this room. And you know who you are. Now, you folks that are new, I'll tell you, this is a fabulous program. Absolutely fabulous. When I first came in, I got to tell you that I did not expect what we have here. You know, I came in, they said, now, when you come in here, you've got to go to a lot of meetings. And I said, why? You don't understand. There are TV programs that I want to watch. But they said, you go to meetings. And I says, okay. Now, and they said, you got to get a sponsor. And I says, why? I don't want somebody telling me what to do. And after 5.5 months of doing it myself, I got a sponsor. Makes it a lot easier, I gotta tell you. Now, man, he said, you gotta work these steps. I don't want to work these steps. I told my psychiatrist everything that needs to be told. But I had to work these steps, you know, and a little at a time, my life got better. A little at a time, you know. I'm obsessive compulsive anyway, so, you know, the first 18 months, I went to 2 meetings a day, every single day. On Saturdays and Sundays, I went to 3 or 4 or 5, you know, because I felt safe here. I hope you feel safe too, you know, because when I came in here, it was like, you know, he said that I had to find a God. I didn't have a God, didn't want a God, didn't need a God, gave up on God long time ago when he gave up on me, and I found a God here, my own. When I came in here, I felt safe and secure. It was like somebody wrapped me in a blanket of warmth and love. And it was in here. I didn't feel that all the time when I went out there. But that blanket was in here the minute I walked through the door. You know, and I hope it's the same thing for you. You know, when I came in here, I wish the heck they had somebody here that had a nice red and white striped blouse with a baseball cap. And when I came walking through the door, just went, safe! Because that's what it is. You come in here, it's like, safe. You don't have to drink again. You don't have to use again. I can tell you from 32 years of drinking, you don't have to drink again. Oh, statistics. Okay, I haven't had a drink or a drug in 8 days, 6 months, and 20 years. So, and it's just, today, I don't drink. I drag my ass in here at 44 years old, and I got to tell you, I was not a vision for you. You know, oh, Lord have mercy, you know. I was, you know, my best friend called me his long-haired, pot-smoking, hippie freak friend. And that was my best friend. So you know what the others, well, there were no others. You know, because those that had not burned me out of their life, I burned them out of my life. I had no use for people. Other than my girl and me, we were against the world. It was just us getting stoned every night. And then it was me. And it gets lonely after a while, you know, when you can't find somebody else sicker than you to keep you company. You know, she was the type of person that, you know, I'll tell you, I tried to commit suicide when I first came, you know, before I came in here. And I remember calling that lower companion and saying, I'm committing suicide. You know, the world doesn't understand me. I'm a genius and nobody appreciates it. So goodbye forever. And don't come over. Well, that was 8 days, 6 months, and 20 years ago, and she still hasn't shown up. Watch out who your lower companion are at the end. Jesus, yeah. But, you know, they told me I had to take a fourth step. I didn't want to take a fourth step. Nobody wants to take a fourth step. God, you know. And yet, I was told statistics. They said that 85% of the people in this room don't take an inventory. and 85% of the people in this room go back out and die drunk. Gee, I wonder if there's a corollary there somewhere, you know? They said that I had to come in, sit down, shut up, listen. I did. They said that I had to show up. When I said that I was going to show up, show up. And I did. They said that I had to have commitments. I didn't want commitment. My first meeting, somebody said, look, Monday nights, you're going to come up to Pacific Palisades and help us set up chairs. And I said, no, I'm not. They said, look, dummy, that's the way you're going to stay sober. I said, okay, what time do I show up? You know, when I was about a month sober, somebody said, you know, you realize that you've got an 85% chance of staying sober if you get involved in hospital and institutional work. And I said, oh, it says that on page 15 where Bill Wilson used to go to hospitals whenever he got depressed. Okay, fine. You know, I went over to an old timer. I said, you go to H&I, when can I go? He said, well, you got to be 6 months. I said, okay, well, when I'm 6 months, where do I go? Because I knew that I was going to be here. And sure enough, I've been spending 20 years going out to hospitals and institutions, and it's the most fabulous type of work that you can possibly imagine, because it takes me out of me. See, that was my biggest problem when I came into these rooms. I thought only of me. You, peripherally, but only if you had something to do with me. You know, when I went to sleep, the world died, you know, and it was all me, the world according to me. And I was amazed to find out that I'm just a grain of sand out there with the other grains of sand. I didn't want to think about that. I didn't want to be a grain of sand. I wanted to be Mr. And I, first time I got up to speak, I thought, all right, a new Clancy is born. I found out I hate speaking. I don't like to speak because it's like getting up here, unzipping, and exposing myself to everybody, and I don't like to do that. You know, I like to stay quiet. I like to stay over in the corner. I don't want to share with anybody. I like to be quiet, keep the secrets, talk to myself. You know, me and me, we'll get all the stuff. You know, we'll know exactly what's going on in the world, you know. We'll tell everybody else, you know. Shit, you know. I don't know about you, but I'm perfectly happy to go home on a Friday night after work, turn on the TV, rent the videos Friday night, turn on the TV, and not leave my apartment until Monday morning when I go to work. Not talk to anybody. Makes me very, very happy. Very happy. Then I have to go out and talk to people again. See, I have a loneliness disease. I don't know about you, but when I was 4 years old, I felt totally separate and apart from everybody else in the world. Totally self. You know, I hated everybody. And I knew damn well the world hated me. Now, it was as simple as that. And I trusted nobody. I still don't trust most people. I don't trust adults. I don't trust bosses. I don't trust cops. I don't trust any authority figure whatsoever. I don't care who they are. Heaven forbid if a secretary says something to me. It's like, what do you want? You know, why? By the way, who canceled on you, Michael? Now this is going a little different. See, I didn't want to have to show up at anything. And I'll give you a little background of mine. You know, I started off down Virginia on a farm, learned how to farm when I was a kid, moved to the big city up north, up to the tenement projects where at the age of 8, I was running around with a switchblade trying to survive. I have a typical childhood, you know, gang fights. Father molested me, stepmother molested me, you know. I hated the world. It was as simple as that, you know. Ran away, started running away at the age of 10. At the age of 12, I discovered that wonderful elixir, wine. Man, I love that stuff right away. And I was 12 years old. My folks went out one New Year's Eve. I found a bottle of Dago red wine in the closet. I drank the wine. I had fun. I threw up and I passed out. You know, in the morning I came out and I looked in the snow and there it was. Okay. I had fun, you know. Because, see, as you go along, you have to depend on others to tell you if you had fun last night or not. Because you weren't there. And that started it. I drank whenever I could. Now, at 12 years old, you couldn't drink too much. You know, so you had to go to parties. And luckily, I lived in an Italian neighborhood, and there were parties all the time. Everybody was making wine in the cellar, you know, and everybody wanted you to have a taste. And it was just wonderful. I loved it, you know. And, you know, at the age of 16, I ran away permanently, got a job. And 17, I decided I'd become a man and I joined the Air Force. Now see, I started running away at the age of 10. I ran away steady, all the time. When things get hot, I'm gone. It's as simple as that. When things get hot, I'm gone. 17 years old, Mom signed these papers, I'm going into the Air Force. 3 days later, they lied to me. They said I wasn't going to go for months. 3 days later, I'm sitting at Sampson Air Force Base in Lake Geneva, New York. It's December 6, 1953. Snow up yin-yang. And, you know, and inside it got so cold that the butt cans were frozen. You know, it was that bad. And in a very short time, I got homesick. So when I get homesick, I go home. Well, the Air Force is very nice. They send people to bring you back. With sickening regularity, I'd go. When things got hot, I went, because I had made a very bad career choice. You know, for somebody that hates authority figures, to be in the Air Force where everybody is your senior, man, it's, you know, I went in and I thought, well, fine, pretty soon I'll have all types of stripes. Well, I got to tell you, I went in as an airman basic, and after 3 years, I got out as an airman basic. Now, the janitor was senior to me. Jesus Christ, you know. That was from all the court-martials, you know. And then, of course, you know, they sent me overseas, and I ran away there and, you know, met the first of the four ex-Mrs. Barrackses. Lord have mercy, you know. Had a son over there and discovered what life was and what sex was and marriage and, you know, another fix. God, that was a great fix. Anyways, I got out of the Air Force on a general discharge under honorable conditions. It's a special clause that says, for the good of the service, something about I wouldn't obey orders or something like that. Not that I was outright rebellious, I just didn't listen, you know. I just ran away when things got rough. You know, so I came back here and went back to Buffalo and promptly got married again and had a couple more kids and left there and came out here and probably had another kid and, you know, Jesus. Now, so 4 kids later, I'm 26 years old and I'm wondering, what the hell am I doing, you know? I don't even like kids and I'm having kids, you know? It was ridiculous. Now, I got to tell you, had I come into this program at 36 years old, I would have been a pure alcoholic. And I loved my booze. Loved it. It was just exactly what I wanted, you know. It allowed me to get away from you. It allowed me to put that glass wall down between me and you. You saw me behind there, but I wasn't there, you know. At 36 years old, I moved out of ex-wife number 3's house. And just to tide me over for a week, I moved in with my 18-year-old stepson. My first night there, he rolls a Mondo joint, turned down the lights, put on the strobe lights, little Jimi Hendrix, and he says, you smoke it like this. I started smoking it, and I said, hey, how much is this? This is good stuff, what is it? And he told me, and I fell in love. This was manna from heaven. See, I was getting fat from all the beer. I said, with this stuff, I don't have to drink beer anymore. I can get stoned and I don't have to drink beer. Great! So I bought a lid from him that night, and the next week I bought a pound, and I was off and running, you know? Well, more. That's anybody's middle name here is more. And I want more, more of everything. You know, it was great. And the first of the 18-year-olds started moving in with me. You know, it was just party time, you know? We just had fun, you know? That first night, I could feel my hair starting to grow long. And I said, all right, I know my life's ambition. I'm going to be a hippie. Long-haired, pot-smoking hippie freak. That's me. So I started doing it. And I started doing every drug that I could find. Now, I got to tell you, kids, I feel so sorry for you. Because my real hippie days was in the 70s when you could get everything very, very freely. And you know, I told you that memories. Went to see a kick-ass movie today, you know, XXX. Great, absolutely great. And I sat there thinking, wow, you know, if I were in this day and age, you know, at that age and all, I wouldn't be doing that. I'd be staying home. I'd be listening to music. I'd be living in the land of Someday Isle. Someday I'll go here, and someday I'll go there. Someday I'll do this, and someday I'll do that, and I'd never get off that damn couch. So I know that wouldn't be me, you know. But I started into the marijuana, but there's that raspy old Mexican dope just before Paraquat. So it was so raspy, you had to drink a beer between each joint, you know. So I was putting on a lot of weight, you know, because you ever notice the first joint somebody gives you, it does not come with information that you're going to eat the left side of the refrigerator? Nobody tells you you're going to get a big appetite. You know, every night, there I am, driving down to Pink's or Tommy's. About midnight, I'm swaying in line with the other dopers. Waiting for that double chili cheeseburger. Scarf that down and go home and pull out that Sara Lee frozen chocolate cake. Oh, man. We got some more munchers around here. All right. I start putting on weight. That happens. So I went back to my stepson. My stepson stayed my pusher for the next 8 years. You know, we kind of kept the money in the family. I went back to him and I said, Stuart, I'm putting on this weight. What can I do? He said, do like I do. Take these little white pills. They really do it. So I bought a couple hundred little white pills. And I started using those. Man, he was right. Man, I lost about 50 pounds in 2 months. Just melted off me. I could use a couple hundred of those right now. And Jesus. No, but it was just, I was going everywhere real fast. What friends I hadn't gotten rid of, I got rid of during that period of time. You have any idea how many people you can slice to pieces in a short period of time, you know? And you sit there and you watch this light going, and you don't realize it's the sun going. Everything moves so fast, you know. And I got down to about a 30-inch waist and, hell, I was wearing my girlfriend's pants there for a while, you know. Oh, Lord. Moving high, you know. Dyed my hair real blonde. Like that. Then I dyed it black, didn't like that. You know. Grew a mustache. Grew a beard. You know, became a hippie. Yeah. 1970s hippie. Lord. I went back to my steps and I said, you know, this is really fantastic. I'm going all this time. I lost all this weight, but, you know, I can't get to sleep anymore. What can I do? He said, hey, man. Have a Quaalude. Yeah. Can I buy a couple hundred of those? I love my Quaaludes. I love popping them, I love breaking them up and putting them in Thai stick and smoking it. You know, I loved everything about it. It just mellowed me out. You know, see, all I wanted in my life was to be comfortably numb. And that made me numb. I didn't feel anything. I didn't know anything. I didn't do anything. I just sat there. Now, occasionally I'd go out and I'd go somewhere. I think. And I'd go out and I'd hop, say, after two lewds and a six-pack, go out and hop into my 71 Barracuda, hop her into first, cruise around about 5 miles an hour. You don't want to draw attention to yourself. And I'd be rudely awakened, and I open my eyes, and I see that I just rear-ended somebody at a stoplight. But I hit him so soft. They just wave to me in the rearview mirror and drive away. You know, I just take a little nappy poo. You know, that's what lights are for. You rest on the way home, you know. I was a great red light napper. Little at a time, my life started turning into crap. Don't know why. I was still the same person, but a little at a time, things went to pot. Another ex-wife came and went during time. Okay. Another doper, of course. Yeah, gradually my friends started dying out. You know, people blew their brains out and so forth. I thought that was awfully sloppy. So I figured I'd mellow out. So I was 44 years old, and I decided that I would just mellow out with the best. Pulled out 50 10 milligram Valium. Yeah, I love Valium too. Six-pack of Michelob and a bottle of Stoli, and I went in my record room. Now, people of the 70s, hippies of the 70s, had a record room. You would call it a second bedroom, but we called it a record room because we had things called records. They're big, round, vinyl things. They take up a lot of space. So we'd have bricks and boards just piled up and have them slotted in there. And, you know, I had a couple thousand records, and I knew every cut on every record, you know. And I went in to pull up my 10 favorite cuts, you know, my 10. And I was going to mellow out, you know, to Jimi Hendrix and Janis Joplin. Little mood music started off was Freddie Fender's Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. Freddie started that Wasted Days and Wasted Nights. And I started popping Little Blue Valium and crying. Got long-distance telephonitis, you know. I don't know about you, but when I'm in my cup, somebody from the East Coast understands me a lot more than somebody living around the block. So you pick up the phone, you start calling folks you know on the East Coast. And if it's midnight here, what time is it there? 3 a.m. Don't they love to hear from West Coast drunks at 3 a.m.? You know, you call ex-bosses and people you went to school with and ex-wives, Lord, you know. You try and tell them why it's their fault that you deserted them. I mean, they don't want to hear that stuff, you know. Jesus. You know, and this one time that I did that, I had this stone-cold, sober thought, like, Jim, this is a life-and-death decision you're making. Maybe you better sober up before you do it. And I staggered over and I turned off the stereo and crashed. And in the morning I woke up and I didn't know what to do, so I called up ex-wife number 4. She knew all about psychological things. She'd just gotten out of Patton State Hospital. She'd been getting shock treatments for her alcoholism. She said, Jim, I've been telling you, you need a shrink. I said, okay. So I called the shrink. Now, I'm a list maker. I made a little list before I called the shrink, because I want to know exactly what I'm going to tell the shrink. So I called up a shrink, and I says, okay, here's my problem. I just tried to commit suicide. My girlfriend doesn't want to come back to me. My family doesn't want to talk to me. My boss is trying to fire me, and I think I might be a budding alcoholic. And she said, come on in, we'll talk. And I went in there, and I dry swallowed a couple little blue Valium. And for 6 weeks, I told her precisely what my problem is. And you all know precisely what my problem was. It was them. It was my mother. It was my father. It was my stepmother. It was my stepfather. It was the school. It was the Air Force. It was the ex-wives. It was the ex-girlfriend. It was the kids. It was society. It was the ex-boss. Nah. I knew exactly what my problem was. It was them. I never saw those damn three fingers pointing back at me until I took my fourth step. I blamed the world. They were all at fault. I only had problems with three types of relationships. I had problems with you, with me, and with God. Other than that, I was okay. In case you're wondering, there are no others. That's the only three you can have. And I told her all my problems, and I figured I'd, you know... One day, I'm on the way out. She says, Jim, do you still drink? And I says, yeah. She says, don't you think it's time you did something about it? And I says, oh, yeah, okay. And I went home and I thought about it. And I remembered seeing Days of Wine and Roses. I was half snockered this Saturday morning watching it on TV. And I remember thinking, if I ever get that bad, I'll call them. So I called. You lucky people. You got me. Called up central office and I told him that I thought I might have a problem, and he says, can you stay sober today? I said, sure, that's no problem. Every year I quit for 2 weeks just to prove that I had control over the booze. It's no problem, I can stay sober today. Told me where there was a meeting, so I went to a meeting. It was a Friday night, St. Augustine's. I was not the same suave, handsome, debonair gentleman you see in front of you. I don't like to tell it, but my sponsor insists, and she was a tough old bird, so. I had shoulder-length hair, headband, beard and a mustache, puka beads. Anybody remember puka beads? Rings on every finger, a print t-shirt with a big red tongue hanging off it, bell-bottom jeans and sandals with jingle bells. You heard me walking down the aisle of St. Augustine's that night, I can tell you. What I hate to tell you is that I was then and still am a local Allstate insurance agent. You were not in good hands. Lord, you were not in good hands. But that meeting, I got the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I got that little yellow card called 20 Questions. Got back to my seat. I dated it, went down the line, and I was delighted. I had an almost perfect score, 19 out of 20. I said, yeah! It says at the bottom of that thing, if you have answered yes to three or more, you are definitely an alcoholic. Damn. I only missed one. There was, have you ever had a complete loss of memory as a result of drinking? I said, no, I couldn't remember. But you had me. You know, I still have that as my bookmark in my big book. 20 and a half years later, it's still there. Still dated, you know. Because every once in a while, my first couple of years, I didn't believe you. I'd be at a meeting and somebody would get up here and they'd talk about going through 20 detox centers. And I'd say, I never got through a detox center. I sat in the meetings and I shook on my hands. I didn't want my company to know that I had a problem. And they talk about being arrested 122 times. I'd never been arrested. Other than the Air Force. That didn't count. Spending time in the stockade and solitary. That didn't count. I'd never gone to Skid Row. I'd been with the same company 13 years, living in the same apartment 4 years. And I drive home sometimes thinking, maybe you're not really an alcoholic. And I pull out that little 20 questions card and I say, oh yes, you are. That saved my life a lot of nights. I got honest. Came to meetings here, and I got to tell you, well, yeah, I got time. I can tell you how I found my God. Because my God is my God. But I was going crazy. For those of you who are going a little slightly nuts finding your own God, I'll tell you, for me, I came in here not believing in anything, nothing except me. And I was at a morning meeting here going absolutely bonkers. Because I heard the speaker one more time saying, you've got to find a higher power. And I didn't have one. I was about a month sober. And I went home and I had books spread out on my coffee table. I had the Bible open to one page, the Quran open to another page, the big book, and Jonathan Livingston Seagull for light reading. And as I'm looking at all these books, wondering where is that higher power that I'm supposed to find, I looked at a vase of roses that I have on my coffee table. And I stared at them for a long time. And I said, I can't create those roses out of nothing. Something else created those that's good enough for me. And the weight of the world lifted off my shoulders. Found a higher power that I could believe in. It was a creator. It was as simple as that. Because I got to tell you, every once in a while, I get a new person over there, and I will have them point at one of the plants at my place, and I'll say, go poof and create another bush right there next to it. And they go poof. And once in a while, I check just to make sure. Might be the coming here, you know, but it got easy. I took my fifth step, one of the most wonderful things of all. Isn't the fifth step. It's admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Now remember I told you I had problems with three types of relationships? Admitted to God, that's for forgiveness. To ourselves, that's for understanding. To another human being, that's for humility. I just took care of the problems that I had with three types of relationships right there. You know, it was the most wonderful freeing thing in the world. If you're afraid of it, don't be. Do it. Get it off your back. I started liking it. I took three of them, you know. I got involved in H&I work when I was 6 months sober, which is real good because my first year I went celibate. My girlfriend did not come back to me. I did not make $1 million, you know. I kept my job. I shaved. I got my hair cut. I bought some new clothes, and I got involved in this program. 6 months I went down and signed up for H&I, and I went out on 11 panels that first month. You know, I wanted to spread this disease wherever I could. Yeah. It's great, you got a captive audience, you know. Yeah. 1 year I got up to the podium right here. Got up, I says, okay, here I am, 45, sober, single, sexy, and celibate, where to from here? And I was mad and I was hostile. I went home and I called up my sponsor, Jeannie, where is she? I've been good for a year, damn it, where is she? She's getting ready for you. Your sponsor ever say dumb things like that? Sure enough, 2 weeks later, I'm over at Brentwood Thursday night meeting. 400 or 500 people wandering around and our eyes locked. We just drew each other like magnets across the room. It was an ex-girlfriend of mine. She looked into my eyes. She said, Jim, I got to make amends. I said, fine, your place or mine. She moved in the next day. 2 weeks later, we were engaged. 2 months later, I'm calling my sponsor saying, how can I get out of this? So started relationships, you know, 3-month one, a 4-month, a 5-month. had an 11-year relationship, you know. It was wonderful, you know. 6 years ago, she decided she wanted to use more than she wanted to be here, you know. So, you know, that took care of that. I started making amends to friends. Made amends to family. And I said I had 4 kids, 8 grandkids, and at least 2 or 3 great-grandchildren. I don't know how the hell that happened. I'm not old enough. But made amends to the one here. She took it very, very well. In fact, she came over to live with me for a while. And I'll tell you that one in a few minutes. The other 3 kids didn't want to talk to me, and I understood that. When I called up to make my amends, they didn't want to talk. So I went on, tried to get my stepson into the program. He didn't want to come. Simple as that, you know. 5-year sobriety, my daughter came over, stayed with me for a while. New Year's Eve, we went out to our own separate parties, and when I got home, New Year's morning, I tried to get into the bathroom, and she was passed out on the bathroom floor. So I sat there like any good Al-Anon would do with the 20 questions in my hand. When she woke up, I gave her the 20 questions. She says, "Gee, Dad, not bad. I only got 14. I said, "I got a program for you." She's got 15 years now, you know. That stepson of mine, he went out one last time when I was 6 years sober and blew his brains out drunk. He just couldn't make it, you know. He went to the VA. You know, got out and went home, got drunk. That was it. I was 8 years sober when I got a telephone call about midnight from back east. They do the reverse now. And picked up the phone and I said, "Hello?" He says, "Hi, is this Jim Barracks?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "This is Jim Barracks III. How are you?" And I says, "Fine." He says, "Look, Dad," he says, "I know we haven't talked for 25 years, but I thought it was time to reach out and see what you really like." And we shared for 45 minutes. At the end of that time, he says, "Hey, Dad, here's my phone number. Feel free to call anytime you want to." I said, "How about your sister? Is she wanting to talk yet?" "Not yet." I was 14 years sober. I got an email. "Hey, Dad, I just went to see your webpage. Good-looking picture. Feel free to call anytime you want to. Here's my phone number." Signed, Kathy, my daughter back east. 14 years sober before she finally decided she wanted to have something to do with me. So I called her up. I says, "Hi, this is Jim. She says, "Oh, that's okay. You can say Dad. We know you're dysfunctional." See, because I got to tell you something. I'm 65 years old. I've been living single for the last 20 and a half years, and I'm still living in a dysfunctional household. Who's dysfunctional? Right here. Oh, recently, about a year ago, she came back. She said, "Dad," she says, "you are not dysfunctional. You just function differently." The son overseas, I never heard from until I was 15 years sober. I got an email. I get a lot of email. Got an email. I got 9 websites. That's why I get a lot of email. Get a email. "Greetings. I was wondering if you could help me. My father was stationed at Clark Air Force Base in 1954 to 1956. If you know of him or any other relatives, please let me know. My adopted name since I was 3 months old is Eduardo. No wonder I couldn't find him to make amends." So I wrote back, I said, "Dear son, I've been looking for you now for 40 years. I knew he couldn't come here, so I went there. One of the guys that I sponsor and I, we took off. Took a trip over to the Philippines and Bangkok and Hong Kong and Singapore, and we just had ourselves a ball. You know, got to know him. He got to know me. During our conversations by email, I gave him 20 questions and he answered 16. So I brought him a big book and got him in touch with meetings there in the Philippines. In fact, I ended up speaking there. And they got to know him, and he got to know them, and he's still sober. At least so he tells me. So we spread this disease. God, do we spread it. Either through our genes and, you know. My life has gotten so much better. I am different. I know that. But I don't feel alone anymore. I don't feel separate and apart from anymore. I feel love today because I give love today. Now, when I say that I'm going to be someplace, I show up. Now, I still love meetings. I still love commitments. I still do commitments all the time. You know, they're a big part of me. You know, when I've screwed up, I go to somebody and say, "Hey, I screwed up. I'm sorry. You know, I did something wrong. I approached something wrong. Whatever it is." I was just thinking. Used to have a secretary that had the biggest green eyes that you've ever seen. So totally normal, she was sickening. And I remember one time that I had a sore throat, and I thought that I didn't know what it was, but I had to stay home. And so for a week, I worried about my throat. Not talking to anybody, just worried about my throat. And on the way to work one morning, I decided, well, gee, if I call the doctor's going to say, "Yeah, you've got cancer. I'm going to have to rip your throat out. Then I'm going to have to buy some drugs so that I can overdose. And are they going to say that I slipped?" Oh, well. So, and besides which, my ex-girlfriend works for that doctor, so I'm going to have to start dating her again. Well, what the hell. So I get to work, and I start telling the kids when they first start calling in the morning, and I'm laying this off, "Yeah, I was thinking about suicide," and so forth. And each time I'm talking on the phone, Jackie's eyes are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I thought they were going to pop out of her head after a while. And finally, during the break, she says, "Jim, were you really thinking about committing suicide?" And I said, "Well, yeah." She says, "I've never known anybody that thought about committing suicide." I said, "Really? Everybody I know thought about committing suicide." Yeah. When she gets a flat tire, she calls AAA. I call suicide prevention, you know? It's just the way we happen to be. You know? One of the things that I found when I got here, thank God, is a couple thousand years ago, a very holy man said, "We are not punished for our sins. We are punished by our sins." Man, how true that is for us. Because deep inside each one of us, we have that conscience that's just ticking away. You know, it just keeps reminding us, what did you do last night? What did you do last week? What did you do last month, last year, 5 years, 10 years ago? Yeah, 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 yeah. We had to drink to keep the little bastard quiet. But we'd wake up and there he was again. What this program gives us is a new feeling, a new awareness, forgiveness of ourselves and the people around us. We have a new life, brand new. It's as if we've got a cassette tape full of garbage inside and we just pop it out, we hand it over to God and he gives us a nice new clean one. And it's all fresh and it's all new. We no longer hate ourselves or the world. We find ourselves finding it's a very teddy bear type of world. Today I love most people. I'm in the right place. I hope you are too. And I'm going to give you just a little prayer. My favorite. And that is that I might wish you wealth. I might wish you health. Or the good fortune would caress you. But wealth might bring sorrow and good health could fail tomorrow. So I'll simply say, God bless you.